The views and opinions expressed by the hosts on MadisonTalks.com are those of the host. That's why we do it. Give us a call, 608-210-1667. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to the Brian Beebe Half Hour Variety Hour. It's really 15 minutes of fun, music, and laughter stretched out into something much, much longer. And now, here's your host, Brian Beebe.
Don't give up on us, baby. That's always right. That's, David Soul, man, from Starsky and Hutch, had a recording career. And are we still going? Okay. Hey, it's Brian Beebe, longtime professional musician from up in Wisconsin Dells, Wisconsin. I'm originally from Rockford, Illinois, but it doesn't matter because I don't know anything about Rockford, Illinois. I left there as soon as I could. I got out of high school and came straight up here to the Promised Land. And you probably know I was in a duo for a number of years with Robin Zander of Cheap Trick before he got smart and dumped me and headed for the bright lights and the bright lights of, well, you know what? I'm going to move this over here just a touch and get a little different three-quarter angle on my what happened now? Are we there? Yeah. All right, so that's, is that a better look? I think it is. And there's the, look, there's the comments flashing on the page, too. That's good. Well, we're back on, and we're live on Facebook, sponsored once again by Monk's Bar and Grill, six locations in Wisconsin, a fabulous theater in the one in the Wilderness. I just lost half my, I lost my phones completely. What did I do? Crack this. All right, here we go. Anyway, we'll get this right here. Today, I'm talking about popular music once again, and hoping to get into some of the commonality that popular music has shared from generation to generation. There's a lot of crackling going on, but I'm hearing it now. There we go. There we go. Mike Brockenfeldt, he's got a lot of ability and a lot of technical know-how, but we're working with Stone Age equipment here, and we can't get some of the Facebook things to work when we want them to. But anyway, we're rolling right now. It's the Brian Beebe Half Hour Variety Hour. I don't know where, I think I got that from Laugh-In. The half-hour variety hour. It's like 15 minutes worth of fun and laughter packed into something much, much longer and much more boring. Are you ready with the drum thing? This, all right, because we might need that today. We're sponsored by Monk's at Monk's Bar and Grill all over Wisconsin and by Sorrento's Bar and Grill. And Sorrento's Italian Restaurant. It's not Sorrento's Bar and Grill. It's Sorrento's Italian Restaurant at the Wilderness, up in Wisconsin Dells, where I have performed at least four nights a week for 10 years or more now, a couple of thousand times. I stand in a 12-inch square and play the piano and sing for hours and hours most nights. 2,000 times, I guess I figured out. I've stood there. And I tell people, you know, I work right here, standing in front of the microphone at the piano. It's a 12-inch square. It's not, I don't work over there, and I don't work over there. I work right here, and I'm kind of a victim, just so you know, most nights. You know, if you're a bartender and you've got some kind of irritating customer, you can move down the bar, you can go somewhere else, wait on somebody else, but not me. I'm stuck right there. If somebody comes up and wants to be a jerk and really be bothersome, and it does happen, I'm stuck there. I can't just all of a sudden go down to the other end of the bar.
Well, they heckle
I have to
on
stand
you?
Right there. Well, no, they don't necessarily heckle me, but you'd be surprised, Mike, how many people come up to me while I'm playing and want to talk. Oh, I mean, talk and they talk to me like they're here, they're off the microphone, and telling me something, and it goes on and on, and I want to say, you know, I'm working
just
here.
Just trying to work.
I mean, here's all these other people waiting for something to happen, and you're up here talking to me.
Right.
You know, so I mean, what do I? And they don't really understand that sometimes, and if they do come up and they're a little too enthusiastic, or a little too drunk, or something like that, you know, there's no place to retreat. You have to stand right there and do it. But that's another story. I was hoping today to talk about what I know about popular music, and you know, I played for 20 years down in Florida for people my parents' age. And my audiences were mixed, of course, but it was largely retirees, and I was in my 30s. So it was interesting and fun for them, because here was a young guy standing up there in a Hawaiian shirt and running shoes playing all the songs from their teenager days, and I think they liked me a little bit extra just because I made them feel young. I knew their songs, and I was a young guy. It's a whole lot different when an old person plays your old songs. That's just everybody gets to reminisce and remembers the song, but it doesn't really make them feel like they did when they were kids, unless a young person plays that song. I'll tell you a story. I was playing in this place in Sarasota, one of the last gigs I played in Florida before I moved back up to Wisconsin, and I played a lot of you know, the same songs that I'm playing now. But there was a production at the Performing Arts Center of Riverdance, and these young kids were in this show. They were in their, you know, 20s, 21, 22, 23, in this Riverdance show. And they would come to the restaurant where I played after their show or on their nights off and listen to me. And it was fun. They were very nice, very, very polite kids. And they enjoyed what I did. One night, they asked me if one of their members could get up and play the guitar and sing a song or two. And I was sure, you know. And this kid got up, and he looked like he was about 12, but he was 21, obviously. They were in the bar. And he got up and played the guitar and sang, I Remember Yesterday, and I think a couple more Beatles songs. And this crowd of his friends clapped like crazy and just loved it that he was singing for them. And maybe it was because he was a friend of theirs, but I had just done those same songs to limited response, and here's a young kid doing them, and it was just that much more entertaining. I don't think people, even when you're playing songs from long ago, they don't necessarily want to see an old person singing them because it makes them feel old. Is that right? Is there anything to that? Don't answer that, Jeanette. Anyway, but I was going to talk about some things that popular music has in common from one generation to the next. First of all, way back when, just after the turn of the century, with the advent of radio and music on the radio, songs became 3-minute formats, generally speaking, so you could play a couple songs, talk a little bit, and then run an ad. About every 6 or 7 minutes on the radio, there would be an ad of some kind, and they didn't want the songs to be too long, or it would be too long between advertisements on the radio. So songs became, the format for a song is, generally speaking, 2.5 to 4 minutes, and it still is. You think people, music has changed? It really hasn't changed that much in 80 years since this format started. And generally speaking, if you know anything about popular music, you know that there is a hook. A popular song will have a hook or some sort of a phrase that repeats and becomes the words of the song that everybody associates with the title of the song or the theme of the song. And it's called a hook. And generally speaking, that hook is in the first line of the song or in the fourth line of the first verse, or there'll be two verses, and then it says, basically a good lyric always says, blah, 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 and that's why I say, and here comes the chorus. And that's why I say, that's kind of the feeling that you get. You set it up, you tell the story in the verse of the song, and then it gets to the point, and that's why I say, and that's the chorus, and that's, they all have that in common. Now, they'll either have one of three formats, and this has been true, it's true now, and it always was true. They'll have AAA form, which means that it's just basically three verses. Each one of them contains the chorus or the hook of the song. Or it will be AABA, which is two verses, chorus, verse. And it might be three verses. Or it will be ABAB. But anyway, they all have it. If you check me out on this, go to any song from any generation and see if you can't. If you mapped it out on a piece of paper, it would show verse, verse, four lines, four lines, four lines in the chorus, four lines in the third verse, so the first verse repeated. In the old days, and one of the reasons that people remember songs from World War II in the 30s and 40s is they were very, very simple lyrically. And they quite often would have a verse and a chorus. Don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me is the very first line of the song, and that's also the title of the song. And it has a second verse, and then it'll have an instrumental verse, and then it repeats the first verse again. So everybody, every generation, by the way, they all say the same thing. Oh, they don't write them like that anymore. Our generation's music was the best. Everybody loves the music that was popular when they were between 12 and 16 years old. That's always the best music. Is that ones the Bobby Soxers in the World War II listened to some very, very sophisticated music. The World War II music, the big band music, was the most sophisticated music musically that ever appealed to Bobby Soxers or ponytailed teenage girls, you know. The Beatles and the Stones, and then the 60s and 70s with the a lot of the heavier lyrics and the heavier meanings and whatever it might be, it still was the 12 to 16-year-old kids that were buying those records and loving that music. Now, until they become 70 and 80-year-olds, they'll still love that same music. But it's it hasn't changed. And the other thing that people, when I used to play for those people that were my parents' age, first of all, they were dancers. Boy, they just, that generation danced. I remember a lot of the older guys I played for telling me that when they were kids and the big bands would tour around and wherever they would go and have a dance, if you couldn't dance, you couldn't get a date, because that's where the rural communities, small town people, met other, you know, guys met girls, girls met guys at the dance. And if you couldn't dance, you couldn't get a date. You couldn't get anybody. So they all danced. All the guys would learn to dance. Or even if they didn't dance well, they still got out there. And when I was playing in Florida, even as a solo act, they danced like crazy. I had the beat box going. But I played that swing music, and they just danced from the time I started till the time I stopped. But I talked to these people, I got to know them, and they all like to say, well, you know, our music was the best, and they don't write them like that anymore. And I would always take a minute to remind them about mares, ye dotes, and does, ye dotes, and little lambs, ye divey, and Hutsut Rawson on the Rillera, and Flatfoot Flugey with the Floy Foy. If you are my age or older, you know that I'm talking about some pretty junky songs from that era that they're talking about. But what happens over years and generations of time is that the cream always rises to the crop, to the top. The people who remember the World War II music as being so wonderful remember the best of those songs. They don't remember the crappy ones that faded away. Every generation of radio listeners and record buyers has great songs and crappy songs. And you can be my age right now and be saying, Brian, no, this new stuff is completely... No, my sons are both in their 30s, and they are going to remember the Beastie Boys as being some of their favorite records. You know what I mean? And we would have thought that was... And Run DMC and the early rappers. And so there's right now on the radio... You can say you hate rap or you hate modern country or whatever. There will be the cream of the crop will stay with us, and the junky songs will go away. Are we getting close to a break here, man? I'm sponsored today by Monk's Bar and Grill, and up in the Dells, they have the one at the Wilderness has a great 180 seat theater in the basement, where they have concerts, and they've since September they've had the Stevens Point Brewery concert series, and they've had everybody from Robin Zander of Cheap Trick and his son, and they usually play acoustic guitars, and they do Cheap Trick music and their own favorite songs, and then a big clunky old blonde guy gets up and joins them for a few songs at the end of the evening. Then they also have Miles Nielsen, who is Rick Nielsen of Cheap Trick's son, and his band come. They've had Holland Zander, Robin's daughter from Rockford, and her band comes up. Then, I don't know, it's because I'm involved in these concerts that everybody seems to be related to Rockford and Cheap Trick. This weekend, Saturday, April the 8th, that's the weekend after this one, they're going to have the original lead singer of Cheap Trick. Before Robin joined him was a guy we went to high school with named Randy Hogan, and Rick Nielsen named him Zeno, and he is going to come up to Monk's on the 8th of April, and they're going to do he does a show with Joe Ketchum, who is the concert master at a fine theater down in the 3rd District in Milwaukee. And he plays violin with all these fabulous effects on it. And they play classic rock tinged with classical sounds. And what a noise the two of them make. It's just enormous. And they will be there Saturday. And I think that's the last show then until Miles Nielsen comes back in the spring. And over the summer, the Monk's location at the Wilderness there is so busy that they have to seat people for dinner on weekends usually in the theater downstairs there. And then it'll kick up again in the fall with the concerts again. I'm also sponsored by my old friend Tom Field at Sorrento's at the Wilderness. These guys have been like family to me for the 10 years plus that I've been playing there. And I play there 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. or until we all fall down, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And you can eat right at the bar and listen to my music and request songs. And then if you're from Madison, you can still be home by 9:30, 10 o'clock. You can listen to me for an hour and a half, because I start at 7, and then still be home by 9:30, 10. There's no excuse. So, Mike Brockenfeld is helping us out with the technical stuff today, and we're going live on Facebook. I'm hoping that lots of people are watching and will share this with friends. And I will be back with more about the commonality of popular music from generation to generation in the next segment here. Stick with us. Thank you.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com. Looking for your creative commentary. You're listening to MadisonTalks.com, stimulating conversation on a variety of subjects and issues that matter. Share your questions, comments, or answers with us at 608-210-1667. Now here's your host on MadisonTalks.com.
I love this, Mike. What is that, Apple Loops or something? I just love that. Although, I've had people say that the cool jazz that they play on the breaks kind of puts them to sleep. For me, I love jazz, and I love cool jazz. One of my favorite parts of living in Florida was all the jazz and cool jazz that was everywhere down there. And my feeling, and you musicians, please call me. This is 608-210-1667. And back me up on this stuff. I have always been of the opinion that jazz musicians were originally pop music musicians or rock and roll musicians who just got so good that the form, rock and roll and pop music forms, weren't interesting enough to them or challenging enough to them anymore. So they had to move to free-form things like jazz, where they could just stretch out and really just blow and play, and they played with other fabulous, over-the-top musicians in jazz trios and quartets if they wanted to work. If they didn't care about working and they just wanted to play the best music they could play, they would get with like a big band of music, musicians, and read charts and really play well. I remember a quote because Sting of the Police has played and made jazz records and pop records. He was talking about the difference between jazz and rock, and I like this quote. He said, in jazz, musicians generally have a measure or two to get their fingers loosened up or feel the groove before their solo comes up. And then they can blow and be as good or as subdued as they want to be. But he said, in rock music, you have to burn, this is the quote, you have to burn from the very first bar. You have to come right out of the blocks hot as you can be.
That sounds right.
In pop and rock music. And that's a true story. I mean, jazz is fun for its uniqueness, but pop and rock is generally speaking, you get 3 minutes. In the old days when I was a kid, songs were 2.5 minutes, a minute and a half, 2 minutes long. You had to get it said, and you had to get all the energy into it from the very beginning. And once you hooked them in the first 30 seconds of the song, you could, Pete Townsend of The Who, in a lyric book that I read, was explaining that once you get them in the first verse of the song, or maybe a verse and a chorus, the second verse can be about something completely different from the whole rest of the body of the song, and then you come back to the original theme. Because it doesn't matter, once you have grab their attention and establish what this song is and what it's about. Is it a fast song? Is it a slow song? Whatever it is, you can get away from that theme and come back to it. And pop music will allow you to do that. And there's a fabulous book, if you ever have a chance, if you're interested in what I'm talking about here today with the song forms, the lyric forms. There's a book by Sheila Davis called Lyric Writing, Expert Lyric Writing, or Better Lyric Writing, it's called, by Sheila Davis. And she interviews a number of people that are, you know, established, well-known songwriters, and talk about their craft. But she basically lays out the differences in the basic form that popular music lyrics all have. Interestingly enough, there was years ago Brian Beebe went into the bookstore at the mall and found a book called Songwriter's Market. If you are a writer or a cook or anything, there's generally speaking crafter. There's these writer's market books. They're published in Cincinnati. Will tell you how to take your craft that you make, a craft or your song or whatever, and sell it. How do you sell it? How would you package your song up to market it to publishers and record companies and artists themselves? Well, this book, Songwriter's Market, taught me how to do it, and that's what I did when I was just starting out. I wrote songs and made cassettes and sent them in the mail to a wide spread of people, whether they were record producers or publishing companies or record companies or whatever it was. And I crossed the spectrum so that I could really get a cross-section from all these people, see what they thought of my stuff and what if I could make my way and my living as a songwriter. And interestingly enough, Mike, my first cassette, I went to Full Compass Studios in Madison and made a four-song demo when I was just starting out of original songs. And I packaged it on a cassette and sent it out to 25 or 30 addresses from the book. They show you actually how to package it and where to send it and all that stuff. And it included a self-addressed stamped comment card, so they could actually write back to me.
Nice.
And I put a stamp on it, my return address. So anybody, like an A&R person who listened to my tape or whatever, could, instead of just tossing it, they had an actual card. They could say, I liked song number one, but song number two was crap, and three and four need a lot of work.
That's pretty great.
There's a little place at the bottom for them to comment. And believe it or not, Mike, of the 25 I first sent out, I got 20 of them back.
Wow, that's awesome.
Letters guiding my career and all that stuff. But the one thing that was interesting looking back was, of the 20 or so that I got back, they couldn't agree on one of the four songs. Which one? They would all say, I really like song one, but two, three, and four need a lot of work. Oh, I really like song four, but one, two, and three,
right.
You need to start a rewrite on that. So, I mean, they didn't really understand. And looking back, I realized that these guys were basically, at the time, $4 an hour guys that were listening to big piles of tapes that
screening.
Were sent in. And they would often listen to the first 10 or 15 seconds and throw it in another pile. I'm going to listen to that later. Or just throw it right in the trash.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But anyway, the song form was important in that lyric writing book. This Songwriter's Market book actually had a lot of stuff from Sheila Davis's book, too, about writing better lyrics and writing better songs and stuff to kind of help a songwriter along. And I don't know if they still make this book, but here's another interesting story. The second year, I got the first book, and I think it was 1980 or whatever. And I don't know if that was the first year they published it, but the second year that I knew about this book, the publishers were in Cincinnati, and they were going to a lot of the listings in their book and asking them if they'd gotten any interesting submissions from anybody. You know, have you heard any good guys sending you stuff? And it turned out that I had signed to a record producer in the book who was in Cincinnati. Okay, oh, cool. And he was putting some money into some songs of mine, some tapes. And they contacted him, of all the people, and he said, yeah, I got this guy, this Brian Beebe, and he's really good, and he's coming here to do some demos. So when I went to Cincinnati to do this recording with this guy, because the book was published in Cincinnati too, they interviewed me about how my experience with the book. And the next book, the 81 edition, has a cameo of my picture. Sweet. And what I said in the interview in the book. I'm in a national book. But it didn't turn out to produce anything for me. I had my songs listened to by a lot of famous people, but nobody bought any of them. I had songs sent to George Thorogood and Kiss and Kenny Rogers. I mean, really, this publisher I was signed with tried hard to get me a deal. They didn't have, this was a big, big publisher, but they didn't have any real pull in the rock and roll market. But they did give me money. They paid me in advance, and they paid for my demos, which was really cool. I'd send them a little tape of guitar and vocal of a few songs, and she would pick, of the 10, she'd send me a check for $500 and say, hey, go make a demo of these four.
Cool.
So at least that my demos were paid for.
Yeah, big time.
That was fun. But I didn't get anywhere. And I thought, sure, I would, because, about the time that I was trying to get my career started, Robin Zander, my ex-partner, and Cheap Trick were starting to be the biggest band in America for a while there. And I had these two songs of the six that we recorded in Cincinnati. And this guy, this producer, had a lawyer in New York that shopped him around to the big shots in New York. Mm-hmm. And my two songs were on the desk in front of Bruce, what's his name, I can't remember, from Epic Records, and Cheap Trick's picture was on the wall. Here's my old buddy, and my songs were on this guy's desk, and he didn't bite.
Oh.
Yeah. So anyway, let's go to break here, and when I get back, I'll talk some more about the. I got jokes. I don't mean to be talking about me so much. I'll come back with a couple of jokes for you. It's springtime. Brian Beebe Show, sponsored by Monk's Bar and Grill and Sorrento's Italian Restaurant.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com. Looking for your creative commentary. You're listening to MadisonTalks.com, stimulating conversation on a variety of subjects and issues that matter. Share your questions, comments, or answers with us at 608-210-1667. Now here's your host on MadisonTalks.com.
Ooh, ooh, baby, baby. Ooh, ooh. I used that one before. Let me think. I don't like you. but I love you. Seems like I'm always thinking of you. It's an old Smokey Robinson song, which I really like Smokey Robinson. I learned about Smokey from the Beatles, though. I wasn't a hip kid when I was young until the Beatles told us about Muddy Waters and Chuck Berry and stuff. I didn't know who they were. And then went back and learned a lot of that stuff. We're celebrating a happy anniversary, 1 year anniversary to the Lean Cuisine that's in my freezer right now at home. I just, I don't eat the way I should, and I don't clean out the fridge the way I should.
Does it pay rent at least?
No, but you know what? I keep thinking, it can't go bad in the freezer, can it? I mean, eventually, could you eat that Lean Cuisine that's in there?
I think the freezer burn's going
to Well, yeah, you have to check that out. I'll tell you, one time I was cleaning out my fridge, and I got way, I don't do that often, you're being a bachelor, but I got way down underneath the drawer in the bottom, and in the back, I found a lime. And I thought about it. I said, I don't think I've ever bought a lime, okay? So then I realized that used to be a head of lettuce. It's bachelor stuff. You know, I've been single now for a while, and I remember my wife, she used to buy a lot of things that you really don't need around the house. Bachelor, like a cover for the toaster. You know, do you really need a cover for the toaster or those covers for the burners on the stove? You know, you don't need a, what was the other thing she used to buy I thought we didn't really need? Oh, yeah, sheets. Come on. Where's my drummer there? Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah, that's, I don't know.
Sheets.
Yeah. See, what else is going on? You know, I've talked before about my online dating experiences and stuff, and it's really not going any better. I told this one girl that I met online, and we went out for lunches, and I told her that I thought she was drawing her eyelashes too high. She looked surprised.
Yeah.
When I told her, she looked surprised. I like that one.
Dig it.
I'm going to tell another one that you won't like so much. I tell this one at Sorrento's once in a while, and I shouldn't even tell you it's a joke because that's funnier if you think it's real. But anyway, I dated this girl, and she, I don't know if I should tell this, but she had a lazy eye, and I finally broke up with her because I had a feeling she was seeing guys on the side. There we go. Come on. Uh-oh. No, there's somebody calling in to complain about the jokes. I don't know. All right. When I was a kid, I'm going to tell this other story. When I was a kid, we used to play Spin the Bottle. And, of course, if you spun the bottle and it landed on somebody that you didn't want to kiss, you had to put a quarter in the middle. And I was a big, fat, ugly kid. And by the time I was 12 years old, I had enough money to buy my own house from all the quarters. And what is this? Am I back on? I don't know if I came back on. Did you?
Yeah, we have Mitch on the line.
Mitch who?
Mitch Hank.
Oh, my God, my mentor, Mitch Hank. I'm so impressed since I met Mitch Hank about a year ago. When Cheap Trick mentioned my name in their acceptance speeches and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, all of a sudden I was fairly famous locally for a few days, and I got invited to be on the Mitch Hank program back when he was on the iHeartRadio and WIBA and all this stuff. Is this Mitch Hank?
You know, I hit Facebook on my phone, and usually I get a lot of traffic. I got your show. I got your face. I mean,
my
like
face?
You're on television.
Oh, yeah? I'm on TV? No, I'm
you're
not.
You're on TV, man.
No, I'm not.
And I'll tell you what, for Stone Age equipment, you're looking damn good, yeah. I think.
Look at this. Can you see your poster up there?
It's kind of backwards, but I'm just focusing on you. I need my Brian Beebe fix.
It says, Kanachim.
Yeah.
Wash.
I don't know what happened there.
Kanachim Wash. When I had my poster up there last week, it had mine backwards, too, and I was Ebeeb Nerb. And Mike thought I should be Ebeeb Nerb from now on on the show.
Well, it's in the background. We're focusing on you. You're like Dean Martin. We can't take our eyes off you. Forget about Frank and Sammy and all these. We're watching Dean, watching Brian.
Yeah.
You've got that smooth presence.
Yeah.
You know, maybe like Chuck Barris died last week.
Chuck Barris died?
Yeah, the Gong Show.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Where was I? Oh, yeah, I was in Wisconsin Dells. Anyway, I would forget about Frank if you would let me, but you won't let me forget about Frank.
No, I didn't. I just meant you have that same charisma, that same kind of
focus.
You can't stop watching.
Hoboken, New Jersey. He was a mama's boy, too, by the way. His mama made him famous. And she made deals with gangsters to get him famous. And then he got all these great breaks with the bands and the great, great songs and all the best everything. And I'm almost done with my rant. And all he ever did, him and Dean both, was do Bing Crosby impressions their whole career. And everybody like Mitch Hank thinks that this Frank is such an amazing guy. Go ahead.
I think there's some hostility there. I think maybe it's some bad soul loss, maybe.
No,
I can't recommend drugs. The FTC would fine me, but...
Yeah.
I sense some real anger there, but at least when you're angry, that smooth demeanor.
No, I'm only running Frank down because you build him up so much. I have made a lot of money over the years doing Frank Sinatra music, you know, because, like I said at the beginning of the program, I played for everybody that was a generation older than me when I was down in Florida, and Sinatra was huge with those guys.
I wonder why people like him, because he's so bad. I mean, he has a lot of millions of fans.
Yeah. Well, for one thing, Mitch, he was the only game in town there for a lot of years, you know. You used to talk about Vic Damone, and you could have Nat King Cole, but in the 40s and 50s, it wasn't. Not everybody wanted to be a Nat King Cole fan, just so you know.
Well, you had Billy Eckstein for a while, and Nat, and of course, I guess he was pre Steve Lawrence and Jack Jones.
Well, all those guys were
Vic
just
Damone.
There's a lot of guys who made a living doing Sinatra impressions too, just like Steve Lawrence and.
Yeah,
Perry Como was kind of
Frank,
Italian guys that, and there was a huge explosion of media back then. Remember all the new shows? TV was new, and
that's true.
And Perry Como had a show. Tony Bennett had a summer replacement show. I mean, God, and Frank never had a show.
He did have a show. He was on ABC.
TV show?
57 to 60. He had a show a couple times. CBS early, then ABC later.
Were this specials or was it a weekly show?
He had a weekly show on ABC Live. He used to do duets with Lena
Uncle
Hart
Milty?
And Shirley
was
Jones.
He on with Uncle Milty?
Uncle Milty, that was the early show on CBS in 51. But more importantly, your lime joke was so good. I laughed out loud on the
lime joke.
The
lime joke? Yeah, well... cleaning out the refrigerator.
I can call you a lot of things, but I guess I would never call you late for dinner.
No, and the bachelor stuff always works. You know, I've been trying to figure out my way since I lost my wife. You know, and the bachelor stuff, dating has changed, Mitch. You and I are both in the same boat there, and I came down to Madison a couple of months ago. And dating has changed. Girls are so aggressive now. And I went to this singles bar, and a girl came right up to me and told me she didn't want to dance with me.
Oh, well, that's absurd.
Where's my thing? Where's my... Yeah.
But up.
Yeah, but up. Yeah, she brought her friends with her. They were giggling. You know, it was this.
Terrible.
Yeah, terrible. And I so I went to the self. I went to the book store in the mall, and I asked the lady where the self-help section was, and she said, "Well, if I told you, that would be defeating the whole purpose."
Oh,
so I said, "Yeah, well, you got me there. You know, that's true."
But I'm pumped.
But
you get good stuff, man. I'm stealing the ones right now. I'm writing them down.
So you don't have to write them down. It's recorded on Madison Talks forever.
Well,
MadisonTalks.com and 24/7 on my Facebook page. You know,
and you look good on Facebook. I think it works for you. We got to get some more psychedelic equipment in the studio, but.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, you just paint some nasty things on the wall or hang up some rude signs or something behind me. But I don't know. I don't think that black is my color. But I didn't choose this shirt today.
I think your son commented about it on Facebook.
Yeah, because when I was down in Florida to see those guys this year, I made a point of getting I like these long-sleeve T-shirts, you know.
Yeah.
Well, listen, it's
your show. I just wanted to call and tell you I got to get my Brian Beebe fixed now.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Mike Douglas after school back when I was in seventh grade.
So far, I have tried to talk about this. You know, you're a big fan of music from years gone by. Your show, you use a lot of, I can't think of what that cowboy piano strings orchestra thing that you use on your show. I love that song, but you don't know what it is, and I don't know what it is, but we both like old stuff. And I know you do your band show and do a lot of the old songs.
Yeah, it's a cabaret. It's more of a, you know, nightclub jokes with the crowd.
You don't sing a song or tell a joke without a big cocktail in your hand, I don't suppose, do you?
I don't really. I have water back there. You know,
yeah, with brown stuff in it just to make it look like booze or what?
Maybe a little Jack Daniels, yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
I wonder if Frank actually had Jack Daniels in that glass.
No, those guys, David Lee Roth always had the Jack Daniels bottle. But they couldn't do what they do night after night if they were drinking. Like,
you're so,
It's all
Dean had
fake,
water. Yeah. You're exactly right.
Yeah.
But no, I don't. I just have water. But I just like to, you're very charismatic, and I just like to watch you work.
You know, I had a guy. I had a guy years ago, Mitch. You know, because I played and the audience was up close, I heard a guy say, because I used to drink quite a lot when I was playing. I was a lot funner a guy, much more fun guy after six or eight drinks than I was at the beginning of the night. Okay, but I heard this guy in the front row say, well, this guy gets better with every drink. And I never had a chance to ask him if it was every drink he had or every drink I had. Do you know what I mean?
Well,
I just, what do you think? It bothered me to this day. I don't know if he meant because I was drinking or he was drinking, you know, but.
I would guess it was the man drinking because, yeah, you're right. You can't work.
Hey, I got to tell you a story, Mitch, as long as I got you. It's a performing story. You know, I always, and you probably do this too, but. I see famous people in the crowd all the time, whether they're really there or not. You know, there's always a lookalike.
In my mind, I'll
say, boy, look at that. That's Peter Sellers is down there. You know, it's not him, but the ones that know who Peter Sellers is will look down and say, yeah, he does kind of look like Peter Sellers or, Mike Ditka or something. But it's always somebody. But I would always get these people to... they always thought it was cool, and they would come back with their friends, you know, and say, this guy singled me out in the crowd and said I looked like Telly Savalas, so, you know, and so they think it's cool. One night, though, I don't know what made me go ahead and do this because it was real questionable. I said, look what we have, and this is back in the 80s, and I said, look, we have Manuel Noriega with us tonight. You know what?
Here's this
Mexicanish-looking guy with ruddy, a real ruddy complexion, you know, and look like Manuel. But the Manuel Noriega, and I said, you know, this is a guy that's an international criminal. Why would I mention that he... That guy in the crowd looked like him. And you know what? Sure enough, the next night he's back with six people. Oh, yeah, he thought I looked like Manuel Noriega. And he was like all of a sudden, he just, why would he like that? But he did, you know?
I don't know. I got nailed once by cutting out a guy with a younger woman. He said, boy, you're robbing the cradle. He turns out he's like from Iraq, and he was offended. he sought me, tracked me down, and yelled at me. No. You can't make fun of me like that.
Oh, yeah, you can't say that. The guy was from Iraq, and you said robbing the cradle? Oh,
yeah.
No, you can't do that.
He didn't find it funny at all.
Oh, geez, you know what I just did? This is your station that I'm sitting at, and I just picked up a piece. It looks like a tissue. I shouldn't even mention that on the show either, but it's probably one of your old used tissue.
Well,
I just picked it up
there.
And was playing with it. My God, give me some Lysol quick or some.
Yeah, actually,
Purell.
We talked about this before. In marriage, Pine Sol is kind of an attractive smell.
In marriage?
Yeah, the first time my wife was nice to me when she smelled Pine Sol.
Because you had cleaned out underneath the sink or something?
I had cleaned a bit, and that's when she would put on something more comfortable. That's the only time it worked.
Yeah.
What's that old joke
of it? Yeah, I got home the other night, and my wife met me at the front door with a sexy negligee. Only trouble is she was just coming in.
Exactly.
I know you got
those Rodney jokes.
Rodney
are
Dangerfield.
Really good.
Yeah, I know you. We can't use them on the air because some of them are just. I
know. I'm a bad lover. I found out Peeping Tommy was booing me.
Yeah, he fell asleep outside the window. Yeah, we like those Henny Youngmans too. You know, is there a call? Oh, I gotta let you go. There's a real caller on the phone, Mitch.
I'm gonna go back to my Facebook. You're just dreamy. You're dreamy. You're like Bobby Sherman.
Hey, here's a little bit of a song that I know you like. I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you care.
Tenors have more fun.
Tenors have more fun. Yeah. All right. I'll see you when I see you, man.
I'll see you. Bye.
We have Annie on the phone.
Annie? Oh, my God. Is this Annie Weston? Maybe Annie left. She hasn't hung up her phone.
I think maybe Annie left.
Oh, no. From Pittsburgh. Annie from Pittsburgh. Are you there, Annie? I'll have to give her some crap. I'll call her up and spank her over the phone later on and tell her all these nasty things. What's that? Okay. Well, anyway, so I got rid of Mitch for Annie. Oh, yeah, maybe that's her.
Brian, baby show. This is Mike.
This is Jeanette.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
Who is it? Somebody's on the phone.
We have Jeanette on the phone.
Jeanette who?
Jeanette.
Oh, Jeanette who? Jeanette Edwards?
Yes.
Hey, Jeanette, turn down your phone, your radio, or your Facebook or something. I don't know if you. It sounds like you're delayed. Are you?
Is it better now?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Oh, there you are. Hi.
Okay.
I'm hoping you have a question. You called up the show on a music Wednesday here. We're talking about music, and you have a question for. My limited knowledge of the subject. Go ahead.
I want to know why you didn't continue writing songs.
Oh, goodness. Well, I can't answer that. No,
what?
I can't answer. I will. First of all, I was convinced for the better part of my adult life that I would end up being rich and famous musician, songwriter, because Robin, my brother from high school through the 70s, was becoming rich and famous, you know, and I was sure that he would haul me on board eventually. But anyway, and this is the way it started for me. He called me up one time. I was living in Madison years ago and asked me to do an arrangement of a song that I wrote when we were kids that he wanted to use on a solo album he was making. So I was excited about that, and I did an arrangement of that song, and then I wrote a whole bunch of other songs hoping that he might choose
something else he liked better, or use two songs, or whatever it is. So I started writing songs. And a couple of years later, I was telling earlier in the show about hooking up with this record producer in Cincinnati, and he spent thousands of dollars on six songs of mine, getting a fabulous sound out of them and rearranging them. And we made these great sounding recordings of these six songs that I had written. And like I said, he had a expensive showbiz lawyer in New York that shopped the tapes to these big hitters in all over the record business in New York, and I was turned down by all the best people in the business, and it kind of took the wind out of my sails. You know, I just I didn't think that I could write any songs better than those. I didn't think that I could make any recordings that sound better than those. And those were rejected. Do you know what I mean? So, and about that same time, I was starting to have a family. And then I moved to Florida and got busy as a performer doing, you know, everybody else's music. And I didn't feel like I could actually play my own songs in my act, because I was in the business of playing songs that people recognized and making them have fun and enjoy themselves and come back and stay longer and buy more booze. And does that answer the question, sort of, Jeanette?
Sure, but have you ever considered trying it again?
Well, yeah, I have written some lyrics in hopes that somebody would come along and, you know, do you remember that group, that girl group up in the Dells? It was an all-girl, teenage girls group that was pretty popular for a while, called the Prom Queen Rejects. And I was hoping I could write some lyrics for them, because I know something about lyric construction. And then they could maybe make the music their own. And that never happened either. But I would love to collaborate with somebody now, if there were people out there that wanted to, maybe they would do the music or part of the music. If, like John and Paul, John Lennon, Paul McCartney, very seldom would write a song together, but they would often contribute little pieces to each other's songs, and I could do that with somebody, and maybe I would be encouraged again if somebody was a songwriter or trying to be get started as a songwriter, and if I could contribute, maybe that I would get back into it again.
It's maybe you should do a little research on how many times somebody gets rejected before they actually get accepted.
Well, I know that it's way more than one.
Yeah.
Like in my case, it was one time rejected and all done. But I know lots of people that are successful have to do it over and over again. Plus, if I did get back into it somehow, I know a lot more about music and songs and stuff than I did then. So I guess, and it's become the environment for launching your own music. Is so much more available to everybody now with the internet than it was when I was a kid, and you had to, you know, make a tape and send it to New York and through the mail and hope somebody heard it. And you know, it's there was I read someplace back in the 70s that anybody who wasn't in the music business already by 1976. When Hotel California record came out, they weren't going to be in the business. They could not get in. It was all locked up. But nowadays, it's wide open again. Are we just about, all right, 2 or 3 minutes? If anybody else wants to call, I should have given out the number more. 210-1667, if you have a second, at the end of the show here. I wanted to tell you once again, I want to thank Monk's Bar and Grill for giving me the money to do these shows, and I wanted to thank Sorrento's Italian Restaurant at the Wilderness in the Wisconsin Dells for supporting me and all my bad habits for the last 10 years, and we'll talk to you again sometime.
thanks for checking us out. A big thank you to Mike Brockenfeld for all the technical assistance, and Mitch Hank for... Oh, there's a call. Is it too late? I'll get him off the air or whatever. Who is it?
Brian Beebe Show. Who's this?
Oh,
Lisa. Cool.
Lisa? Who's Lisa?
Hi, Brian. It's Alicia from Florida.
Oh, my goodness. Alicia. Is this
How
really,
are you?
This is all the way from Fort Lauderdale.
Yes. Yes.
Well, this is sweet. You know, I'm almost out of time, but what a sweetheart.
Just a quick question. I wanted to know, what's your favorite instrument that you play?
Oh, I don't know. I really only play keyboard now because I'm playing in this piano bar situation, and
right.
I don't get to play much guitar anymore. But I used to love to play a really loud rock and roll power chord guitar like Rick Nielsen does. I know you're a Cheap Trick fan.
Yes, I am.
I got you backstage at that one show. You and your
did.
Brother.
You're the best.
Hey, I got to go, but thanks for calling in. Maybe next week you could give me a call and we could talk longer.
Sounds good. Have a good one.
All right, you too.
Bye.